over the hill and rescues us poor whites from the demon Indians. And by the three Kennedys, there's General Custer, looking like he rides well right here and now. And that's all wrong, too.
One of the Apaches heeled his pony a couple of steps forward. The bright sunlight glittered on something at his belt, an axe or a broad-bladed knife. The cavalry and the Indians kept their positions, with Ryan and his companions, the meat in the hostile sandwich.
We could do some chilling with them sitting tight together on the ridge. Get the retaliation in first.
Maybe they're not against us. Seems like the Sekmen don't see them as friends.
Doc looked at Christy, nodding at her words. His roomy eyes blinked like a stone-warmed lizard's.
I've an idea, Ryan. I trust there is no objection to my... what do they call it? Ah, yes. To my running it up the flagpole and seeing if the cat brings it in?
Huh?
Or something rather like that.
Go for it, Doc.
Doc stood up, showing himself above the ring of protective stones.
Fire blast, get down!
Ryan saw the old man fold at the knees like an ungainly heron, just before a scattering of bullets splintered close by him.
Oh, my goodness.
Can't you do it from there, Doc?
Perhaps so. I believe it's best that I try.
Doc wriggled around so that he faced up the hill toward the patient statues of the silent Apaches. Doc cleared his throat, then called up in a guttural, harsh voice. The leader of the Indians leaned forward along the pony's neck, as if he couldn't believe what he was hearing. The rest of the line of warriors all began to chatter excitedly to one another.
What'd you say, Doc? It sure put the wolf in the sheep pen.
Remember that my grasp of Apache was never more than somewhat rudimentary, friends. I may have made a suggestion of the utmost obscenity concerning the sexual proclivities of the chieftain's mother.
Oh, that's just dandy, Doc.
But I hope that what I called out was a traditional appeal and offer of help. My enemies are your enemies. So shall they be as long as the sun rides the sky and the grass grows.
Sure hope it works, Doc. You definitely got them fired up, whatever you said.
As suddenly as they'd appeared, at a signal from their leader, the mounted warriors turned their ponies and disappeared over the line of the ridge, and reappeared in a double, whooping line, heeling their small, nimble-footed ponies down the rock-tumbled slope, passing close by Ryan and his friends, who leapt away from the flying hail of pebbles and whirling dust.
They got about every kind of damn blaster I ever heard of.
Saw a couple of M16s in there.
It was an unusual luxury for Ryan Potter and the others to be able to sit back in relative safety and watch a firefight going on below them. The Apaches were masters of their animals and the cruel terrain, weaving and darting in close to the Sekmen, who suddenly found themselves the besieged instead of the besiegers. The Indians hung around the necks of their mounts, snapping off shots at the hidden cavalrymen. There were puffs of powder smoke drifting across the serrated land.
A man on horseback doesn't shoot straight.
Yeah, but he's also hard to knock down. Could it be a hotspot standoff? Not enough power on either side to take the other?
In less than 5 minutes, Ryan's guess was proven correct. Two of the Indians went down, in each case their animals being shot by the carbines. Both Apaches got up and jogged away unharmed, vaulting easily behind their comrades. From where they watched, it wasn't possible for Ryan and the others to see if the Sekmen were taking any casualties. There was a passing temptation for Ryan to lead the four of them down and try to force the Sekmen out with their superior blasters. But it seemed a whole lot more sensible to stay where they were and await developments. It certainly looked as if Doc's appeal to the Apaches had worked, so far.
Retreat!
While they watched the indeterminate battle petering out below them, the Apaches broke off the engagement, allowing the Sekmen to withdraw in good order. Ryan stood to watch them, and he saw the leader of the white men turn in his high saddle and stare back at him. There was a flash of sunlight off a spyglass, and then the patrol and its leader vanished in a cloud of dust, heading away along the trail toward the north. Doc stood and stretched his creaking legs and brushed his coat clean of dirt.
Now all we have to do is make our peace with the Apaches.
Yeah, that's all.
Before the Apaches could come back up the slope, Ryan led the others to where Laurie was waiting with Jack. The albino boy was visibly sinking toward the long quiet of death. His breathing was so shallow that his chest barely moved at all, and his ruby eyes were closed. The teenage girl looked up, her face pale with fear.
Mutie's gone? Are we safe?
Doc stooped and kissed her on the top of the head.
Don't worry, my dearest child. They aren't Muties. Leastways, I don't believe that they are. They all looked just as they did when I visited with the Mescalero Apaches a few years ago. A few hundred, 200, 500 miles away from home.
And here they come now.
JB held the Uzi casually in his right hand. Ryan held the G-12 against his hip, his finger on the trigger, watching as the stocky horsemen came whooping up the slope, then became silent at a command from their leader. Now that they were closer, Ryan could see what had been glittering at the belt of the Apache war chief. It was a peculiar dagger with a broad, triangular blade that gleamed with a sheen of gold. The hilt was studded with uncut stones of different colors. Even from a distance, the weapon had the unmistakable patina of age and genuine quality. The Apache reined in his horse a few paces from the small group, looking down intently at the unconscious boy. Ryan had seen Indians before. Because of their way of life at the time of the long winters, some of the tribes had survived better than the people of many large cities. They made great trekkers and hunters, and still held their communities in the more distant parts of the Deathlands.
Who spoke in our tongue?
Doc Tanner cautiously raised his hand, showing his oddly perfect teeth in a smile. Every single one of the Apaches stared at him.
I must confess that it was I who addressed you.
Anglos do not know the words of the people.
I was among your people, close by here in the Canyon de Chelly, many, many years past.
You are Muties.
Ryan took a step forward.
We thank you for your help. We aren't Muties, none of us.
The woman's hair, and the hair of the dead boy.
We're not Muties.
The tongue of the Anglo is the tongue of the desert rattler, not to be trusted by the people.
The two groups looked at each other for several stretched seconds. One of the Apaches pointed with a long spear at the unconscious figure of Jack. He said something to the leader.
What did he say, Doc?
I'm sorry, Ryan, but I fear that my grasp of their language was never outstandingly good. The dialect of the Mescalero is far from simple to try to comprehend.
He says that the boy with hair like snow is near the long sleep without waking.
We know that.
The yellow hair and his running dogs have done this thing.
Tell me, is that man Autie Custer?
No, old man. Custer died more than 200 years ago.
I know that. But it's the 7th Cavalry. I saw the Guidon. And his hair, and...
There is a story, like the road down from a mountaintop, winding and slow and with many twists to it. Such is the story of the yellow hair and the pony soldiers who ride with him.
I'd kind of like to hear the story. You got some place we could take the boy?
The Indian swung down off the bright blanket that took the place of a saddle for the Mescalero. He knelt by Jack, studying him with dark eyes.
He will be with the spirits before the sun has slept below the far mountains.
Then we'll bury him.
We have a shaman who has the sight and the hands. He might help.
What's a shaman, Doc?
Kind of a mix of a doctor, a priest, and a faith healer.
The boy is losing the fight. He has fallen?
Yeah. Into a trap for Muti Cougar, a way back.
Ryan pointed in the vague direction of the redoubt, not wanting to give away too much.
What of the Lion of the Mountains?
Dead.
The Apache stood, nodding, as though that answer had confirmed his decisions.
The travois you have built will be pulled by our horses. You will all come with us. You are the enemies of Yellowhair?
He sure isn't a friend.
Good. But if you betray us...
Sure, Chief, I understand.
We don't know your name.
And we do not know your names. There will be a time for that when we reach our rancheria.
Doc?
It means a kind of camp, often up high, in the canyons.
Can this shaman save Jack?
The Apache leader swung himself up onto his pony, then looked down patiently at Ryan.
Can you?
As they left the scene of the abortive firefight, Ryan glanced over his shoulder, seeing that the spiraling dust cloud from the patrol of Sekhmen was still moving steadily toward the north, where dark purple clouds were gathering. The cavalrymen had taken their dead and wounded with them, bodies tied ankle to wrist over the saddles. Jack's head lolled helplessly to one side as the makeshift litter bounced slowly along, drawn between two ponies. His long white hair seemed dull and lifeless. Ryan and the others walked along by the Apaches toward the line of red cliffs that marked the side of one of the long mesas. Over the years, Ryan had seen several old vids of what were called Westies, mainly about firefights between the soldiers and different tribes of Indians. Now, unbelievably, he was living in one of those vids. The rancheria of the sub-tribe of the Mescalero Apaches was in a box canyon, nearly a two-hour ride from where they'd encountered the six whites. If Ryan and his friends had managed to get hold of a detailed map of that part of New Mexico, printed way before the Holocaust, they'd have found it was named Drowned Squaw Canyon. The jaws of the canyon were less than a dozen feet across, barely wide enough for a pair of horsemen to ride in side by side. And it lay at the farther end of a wilderness of coulees and dry riverbeds that wound and twisted in an almost impenetrable maze. Even from 50 paces away, it didn't look to Ryan as if there were any way into the canyon. The trail continued for 100 yards or so, between 200-foot walls of sheer crimson rock, gradually widening until it opened into an area about 600 paces across. At the farther end, under the lip of a wall of seamless stone, was a pool of deep, clear water. There were small fires burning among 50 or 60 low huts, which Doc told them were called wiki-ups. As they walked into the canyon with the horsemen, women and small children came running from the huts, excited at the sight of the white strangers. The leader waved them back with his rifle, then dismounted. He turned to Ryan.
Do you want food?
Yes, and water. But first the boy must be treated. You said you had someone who can help?
Our shaman is called Man Whose Eyes See More. I will have someone go and wake him. The whitehead will rest there, by the fire.
While they waited for the shaman, Ryan led the other four around the camp of the Mescalero Apaches. At their leader's orders, the Indians kept away from the visitors, but three of the older women, faces wrinkled, eyes almost buried in the folds, brought them earthenware bowls of green chili stew, with chunks of mutton floating in it. They also gave them corn on the cob, blue cornbread, and spicy yerba tea. Ryan hadn't realized how hungry he'd been after the action of the firefight, and he devoured two bowls of the hot stew. The sun had disappeared behind the cliffs to the west of the canyon, making the air feel cool and shadowed. They sat down near Jack outside the turf-topped hut. The boy was now on the very brink of death. His breathing was so subdued that it was no longer possible to see respiration. JB had knelt beside him, holding a small mirror to the bloodless lips, bringing only the faintest mist to the polished metal.
Where's this damn shaman? They said...
Christy stopped as the buckskin curtain across the mouth of the nearest wiki-up opened. It was Man Whose Eyes See More. He was so skinny that it looked like he'd have to run around in a rainstorm to get wet. Most of the Apaches were close to the 5'6" mark, but the shaman was scraping at 7 feet tall, weighing barely 120 pounds. Man Whose Eyes See More was dressed in an elegant pair of seersucker pants of ancient cut that were missing one leg below the knee. His top half was clad in a striped cotton shirt with a white collar and a brocade waistcoat with mother-of-pearl buttons. There was a flaming scarlet cravat knotted casually around his scrawny neck, which was held in place with a silver stick pin with an empty claw setting. A pale cerise kerchief dangled from the vest pocket. His feet were bare and a whole lot less than clean. He looked slowly along the line of white men and women, utterly impassive. He stepped in closer to Ryan and reached out, laying a hand across his forehead, gazing deep into the single eye.
The anger for your brother is ended.
Yeah, you could say that.
The shaman also paused in front of Doc Tanner, his face crinkling in bewilderment.
You are of time and not of time. Dead and not dead. Living and not living. Old and not old.
Hungry and not hungry, angry and more angry. Forget about me and look at the lad there.
Dagon, the spirit of the mountain, will not permit too much hurry. Only Ison, the giver of all life, can help your friend. I shall pray to White Painted Woman, and she will help, if she wants to help.
What if she doesn't?
She will or she will not. That is the way now, as it was before the time of the great fires in the sky, and before that, at the times of our forefathers, who lived in peace beneath the tall cliffs, before the dry time came.
JB's hand dropped to the butt of his holstered Steyr pistol.
The kid's near dead. Less talk, friend.
You talk threat to me, Anglo. I lift my hand, and all of you are dust.
I pull this trigger, wizard, and your guts spill around your ankles. Get to it.
Oh. There is much fire within you. Much anger. Much that is bitter and sour. But I shall do what I can. I do not feel there is